Welcome back to the PFRPA podcast. I'm your host, Brian DeMarco, and here today with me, I have a legend, a Houston Oilers legend, Al Smith. Al, how you doing today, man?
Doing good. How you doing, my man?
Well, Dunka, it's great having you on the show. Finally, I know we were scheduling some stuff to do later in the next couple weeks, but I'm glad you could stop by here as we're in Miami and just be on the show with me in person. So much better. I love it.
A lot better. Better than being on a computer, right?
That's for sure. Let's back up a little bit and let's kind of introduce everybody to your playing career. Where'd you grow up? Where'd you go to college? Tell me about where you played pro ball, years, all that good stuff. A little background.
Okay, well, I'm from Los Angeles, California. Grew up in L.A. You know, once I left there, went to Utah State University. You know, played there, had some great teams, great people, had great experiences in Utah. And once I graduated from Utah, I was able to fortunately be drafted. Was drafted to the Houston Oilers in Houston, which was a surprise. A lot of times other teams, you think other teams, but then Houston stepped up and it was another big city. So it was, you know, that didn't bother me being in a big city and all those type of things like that. But you're going into a new environment, new people, new surroundings and a new life, so to speak. Was able to kind of embrace that, was drafted there, and was able to play for Jerry Glanville, was my first head coach, who was a personality, obviously. Everybody knows Jerry, and he was a defensive guy, and me being a defensive guy, and obviously being a rookie was, very tough on me and all those type of things, kept poking the bear, so to speak. but it all worked out because I ended up being a starter as a rookie and started my whole career. I was very fortunate enough to never have been a backup in the NFL. I always was a starter, and which was a blessing, and was able to go on and become an all-pro player and all those type of things, and was very fortunate to be, once I retired after playing a 10-year career, was able to be hired into the front office of the Tennessee Titans / Houston Oilers when they moved to Tennessee. So when I retired, they asked me to come to Tennessee, and then I moved to Tennessee and had been there ever since. So with that being said, that was kind of in a nutshell. And obviously after retirement, working with the organization in various capacities of player development, pro personnel, pro scouting, evaluating talent, player development, getting into, knowing player mindset, obviously the type of players that we wanted to bring in, as far as the evaluation process, combine, all that. It just kind of brought everything full circle for me as far as a life lesson, so to speak, and be able to, pass on those relationships and those understandings and those trials and tribulations, so to speak, onto that next generation, which was a blessing to be able to do that, and still there now, working things with the NFL Alumni Association now, do a lot with that, and just was talking with Bob Smith, and as far as doing some things with the retired players organization as well. Doing those type of things, work with NFL. I'm a compliance officer with NFL as far as compliance on field with the players and their images and what they're presenting on camera. Working in
which that, is a whole different world today.
Which is a whole different world. So we got so many of these different individual players and these personalities, and everybody has their own brand. And so you know the NFL is just one brand, so they don't like to intermix all these other brands within their brand. And sometimes players don't get that memo all the time, or ignore that memo. So that's where that the fines comes to play and what have you. And I'm very fortunate to be on the board of the Player Care Foundation. And a lot of times that helps fund that board. But I'm like, well, if you're going to give your money, you're giving it to a good cause, which in turn helps players that are in need. So it's kind of like, one hand helps the other, but in one hand players are, their violations benefit a player's good too.
I don't think too many people realize what goes on in that sideline with the compliance officer. About you have to look the part when you're on that sideline, or you're getting fined as a player.
Exactly. So you got to look the part. A lot of individuals, a lot of different personalities, but at the same time, it's fun. You're close to the game. You're right there with the action without being in the action, so to speak. You're not tied into the wins and losses when you work with an organization.
You don't have to get hit anymore.
You don't have to get hit anymore. So all that is good. And I'm able to, still have great relationships, still be able to connect with different individuals, with different teams, coaches, former coaches. Yeah. Some former coaches still coaching, And so, you know, some of the young players who were young players and now the older players, you see the evolution of guys growing and building and going into their next phase of their lives and careers, which is great to see.
I remember the first time, I'm sure you remember Clyde Simmons, right?
Yes.
So Clyde comes over to Jacksonville, and I call them Pops. Right, so this is towards the tail end of his career, uh-huh. And I was like, "All right, Pops," and he didn't say that. He just paused for a second, and he turned around. And came back to me. He goes, "You know what?" He goes, "It's gonna be a snap of a finger, and somebody's gonna call you Pops." He goes, "Just remember that." Just remember that.
It changes quick, doesn't it?
All of a sudden, you start approaching 30, and you're the old man. You know what I mean? Isn't that crazy?
Very.
Definitely a young man's game. So we have some cool things in common here. You mentioned that you started as a rookie. I did as well, right from the jump. Boy, the things I learned from year one to year two, playing a rookie. I remember thinking,
brutal.
Man, I just played way too hard. Like the game got easier in a lot of ways, right, as you get older. So what was your experience like between year one and year two?
Well, it was for me, it was great. You know, I was at that time, I was a middle round draft choice. At that time, they had 12 rounds. I went in the sixth round. So you figure, oh, well, I can get a 50-50 shot to make the team or whatever the case may be.
Right.
And I had three linebackers drafted before me, before I got drafted.
Wow.
So you know, and one in the same round.
Oh my gosh.
So, coming in, it was kind of an interesting situation because back then, you know, I was, you know, finishing up school, but they didn't have the rules in place like they have now, where you can't come to training camp until your graduating date, so to speak.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So they don't hold that over your head because, you know, guys won't have to show up to June. They'll come in for a few days after the draft, but they don't have to be there like full time until they're graduated.
Yep.
But well, when I came out, it was like, okay, we get drafted, we expect you here. I'm like, well, I'm on the quarter system, you know, in college,
right.
I'm on the quarter system. I'm like, you miss, you know, a week or two, you know,
you're done.
You're done, you know. So it was like, oh man, I'm like at the end here. I mean, this is my last quarter. I'm getting ready to graduate. I can't just scrap it,
right.
And I don't have no guarantee. I'm not on a first round pick, you know.
Right.
Like for sure,
right.
You know. I'm confident in myself, but I gotta get, you know, I gotta have something out this deal. You
right.
know what I'm saying? So I don't want to go to camp. This is my mindset. I don't want to go to camp, and for whatever reason, maybe out of my control, not make the team. I'm not graduated. I don't have nothing.
And you're so close, like 4 or 5 years of school, and you're like, right here.
Yeah. So it was like, well, I had to get in a situation where, you know, I had to, you know, talk to coaches. I talked to, you know, a quarterback at the time, Warren Moon. You know, he was the leader of the team. You know, said, man, you need to finish school, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, man, I want to make the team. Well, you're going to make the team. Don't worry about it. You know, all this stuff like
wow.
that. So what I did, you know, I ended up talking with my, you know, the teachers that I had at the time. Well, how much time am I able to miss? You know, they kind of knew
right.
my situation. They kind of gave me that parameter of, you know, my
right.
borderline parameter. And then I said, okay, well, I'll just go to this point and then come back. So
yeah.
And learning, you know, so I go to camp, learn as much as I can, do all I can do. And then I had to leave. And then all the other guys are still
man.
There. So I'm like,
oh.
man. So I'm like they're still there doing their thing. And I'm gone. And I'm like, okay, well, then what training camp is like, you know, it's like all or nothing, you know.
Yeah.
So, but I had a peace because of the fact that, okay, I graduated going to, so now I'm graduated going to training camp as opposed to not graduated going to training camp. So I had a sense of confidence knowing I had, okay, I got one out of two.
Yeah.
You know, I got one out of
right.
two.
Right.
You know, I feel better. So I can look, I'm all in now.
Yeah.
I'm all in on this deal. And, went through the camp process, and then like our third preseason game, I get like a tap on my shoulder, you know, and stretch lines, and from the linebacker coach, say, you know, you're starting today. I'm like, okay, like thanks for letting me know right
yeah.
before the game starts.
Right.
you know that moment.
What a heads up.
So
no
I was
pressure.
Like, no pressure.
21,
so,
22 years old.
So here I am, and that was you know at that time, remember that was like. Playing the Cowboys. We always played the Cowboys like the third preseason game because, you know, Houston didn't.
Yeah.
And you got these veterans and Danny White and Tony Dorsett was kind of like, he was like winding down, and I'm like, man, I'm like, tackle these guys.
Right.
But at the same time, end up, doing well and never looked back. And that was, started next week and then the opening day, and Eric Dickerson in the back wheel with Jackie Slater and Irv Pankey and Dennis Hara and Doug Smith and that great Hall of Fame offensive line. And you got Eric Dickerson sitting back there at the tailback. And I'm like, I guess here it is.
Oh, my gosh. All right, so I have to ask you this. I have to ask you this because I know Jackie well, and he's on the board of the PFRPA. Uh-huh. So tell me a Jackie Slater story.
One thing about Jackie, obviously me being in the middle and Jackie being a tackle, I didn't have to really go against him too much, just kind of scraping off and getting around him. But I used to always see how he did our defensive ends. Like, he always did that punch to the face, he punched you to the head. I'm like, man, I said, don't let him do that to you. I'm like, I'm glad that's not me, because Jackie always had that punch, boy.
He punched you
straight in that head. And back then, they didn't call that hand to the face stuff as much as they do now, but
mostly on defense, Deacon and the head slap thing. Oh my gosh, defense get called all day, but offense,
But Jackie definitely, obviously was a great player and still is obviously a great player. But that's one of my memories of him.
God, I didn't have to play.
Our defense, and we had great defensive ends as well. So. Those were some great battles.
I remember thinking about that when we were playing the Bills one year, and Bocelli had this iconic battle during the playoffs against Bruce Smith, and I'm watching it going, man, I'm so glad I have to play. I can see him right every play. Give me this slower dude that's heavier over here. Bruce was a beast, man. I get that.
There were some great guys.
So in the we talk a little bit about the transition that when did it coming out of college and into the pros. When was that first kind of moment where you realized, oh man, I'm in the big leagues now? Like I'm here. I've arrived.
Well, obviously it was that opening day.
Being
a starter on opening day and going against the great Eric Dickerson and that great offensive line all the players that you kind of grew up watching. And that was kind of like my in the Astrodome, my great I have arrived moment, so to speak, if you want to call it that way, because I always looked at football as something that I did. It's not who I was as a person.
Right.
But at the same time, it was – kind of two personalities, unfortunately. I guess it's good or bad. It's like,
we're all a little bit nuts, man. So we all have two personalities.
So my off the field persona is totally different than the on the field persona. And obviously, as a lot of guys can't decipher between the two.
Yeah.
And it kind of carries over, which kind of gets into, unfortunately, different situations that they probably shouldn't get into. But I'm made a point of that to be able to try to decipher between the two,
right?
So that never would have to go down that road, and unfortunately, a lot of that side of what people don't really understand about a lot of athletes is that player side, whether that versus the mama mentality, as opposed to just being a basketball player,
right,
what I'm
saying? Right.
So for sure. So. Is people are hearing about that more now, and I think you can attest to it.
Totally.
You on the field and you now, you can't imagine, you even think back to the things you may have done or had to have done or had to do. How did I do that? Or how did I even get to myself to do that?
Yeah. Well, the truth is, when I tell people now, that personality, so – almost 48 years old right now, I have about 8 seconds of that personality left, and I'm saving it for something really, really important, right? Yes. Like the last piece of chicken or something like that, right? So, you know, I had this thing that I did, and it's funny you mentioned that because it's something I talk about a lot with my son and his friends in football. Mm-hmm. I had this thing with crossing the white line where I would literally watch myself take that step over the line, and I would switch into that other personality. Mm-hmm. That kind of gladiator type, you know, I'm going in there to fight with my brothers and you know, to go all out and to sacrifice and, you know, that whole team thing, unity. Did you have something like that made you kind of hit that switch?
Well, you know, one thing about that, you talk about the switch off the field?
The switch off it, or how did you get the switch off or switch it on?
Well, the switch on is like a buildup. And with a teammate, and it's more of a mindset going into this this so-called battled arena.
Yeah.
And what I have to do to be able to survive in that arena.
Yeah.
Whether I wanted to or not, you know, that day, you still have to
find a way to get there.
You got to get there, otherwise it won't be good for you. Yeah. If you don't get there.
Yep.
Now. Off the field, I avoid those types of things, you know, because I've tried to avoid anyone taking me to that place of no return, so to speak. And it takes work. And I think that's where, you know, some guys struggle with it because of the fact that, you know, okay, so somebody bumped into you, you know, it can set you off. Or, okay, well, you know. I'm going to just go keep walking. It didn't hurt me. I'll just keep it moving. As opposed in your younger days, you know, that would have set off something that wouldn't have been nice.
That's right. That's right. I think too, going off into that personality and how it doesn't mix with like the real world. I think some guys don't understand, like we're trained to punish other human bodies in a way that the rest of the world, they don't understand or can't even grasp, you know, what it takes to manipulate another human body that way or punish it. And, you know, and I've had a few brief experiences in my younger days about what that meant in that situation. So I do the same thing and still do it to this day. Like there's things that I will not do. I just won't associate myself with it because
don't put yourself in that position
ever. You know, because I know that I still have that mentality. You know, it's so even at our age now, there's still, with all of us, I think at times at least, there's a few glimpses where you think, well, I could still do it, right? Even if it's a fleeting thought in your mind, you know, just for a second. But I think it goes back to that personality.
Exactly. But, like, I kind of attested to this. I mean, I tell friends all the time, well, I don't necessarily like that dude.
Yeah.
When it goes there, you know, I don't like that guy. So I don't want to be that guy. So I try to stay away from situations or people that would try to bring that guy out.
Yeah.
If you kind of understand what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like self managing yourself.
Yeah.
In a way.
Well, it's very self aware, which a lot of guys need, especially when you're younger too. Yes. I think being very self aware.
Yeah, and as you're older, obviously you won't go there, but. It's always there.
It's always there. When you need it, right?
When you need it.
But case of emergency, break glass, right?
Exactly. You know, like you say, obviously protect your family or your wife or, you know, or whatever the case may be. But you don't put yourself in a position to have to go there.
I had to explain to my wife one time, I said, you don't even know who that person is. You've never met that person. You don't know that dude. So let's talk about we all have kind of a favorite football memory, right? Mm-hmm. I happen to have this really cool memory about Reggie White. And it actually happened my rookie year. It was like the fourth game into the season. You know, here I am a rookie playing against the all-time sack leader and, you know, national TV, the Packers, and the whole world's media is watching. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, you know, can there be any more pressure on this game? And So anyways, I end up getting out of that game, leaving only giving up one sack, which I was pretty proud of, to the all-time sack leader.
Hey, that's out of 80 plays. Hey,
That's right. Not too bad.
People look at, hey, I stopped them 79 times, and you guys
I chalked it up as a W. I didn't care what the coach said. So I just, you know, after the game, Reggie had come over to me, and actually he jogged across the field. We were walking in the separate corners, and he just gave me a pat on my backside, and he said, you're going to make it, kid. You did a great job today, right? And he gave me that compliment. Nobody else would have ever seen it. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no social media back then and all those things, everybody with a camera, but it was one of my favorites. What was one of your memories like that, that maybe nobody else knows, that something that sticks in your head as a favorite NFL memory?
Well, so many. I even have, you know, I have a Reggie White one as well, but, you know, just not to necessarily piggyback on Reggie White, but Reggie's was for me, I can give you two, but Reggie for me was, we were on the bus in Hawaii going to to a Pro Bowl practice.
Yeah.
It's a Pro Bowl practice. We're on the bus. You know, you don't get to interact. You know how some, you don't get to interact guys with who aren't in your conference or that you don't play.
Right.
So we're kind of sitting there, and he was kind of, you know, telling, hey, you know, hey, how are you doing? Da, da, da. You know, you kind of know everybody's name, but you don't know him.
Right.
And he kind of asked me about my relationship with God, right? And we started having that discussion on a spiritual level about the sports and world and where we are in our lives and spiritually and all that. And for me, that was enlightening in that he cared enough to ask me or care enough to talk to me about this. Because, you know, in the football world, it's more or less, I'm trying to kill you and beat you and win at all costs, all that.
Right.
To where you have this peaceful aspect or this peaceful moment with someone that you respect as a player and as a man that cared enough about you to kind of talk to you about, you know, your walk as well. And we had good conversation about that. And as far as the correlation between the two and what we did and how it's perceived and how we conduct ourselves and carrying that on through life. And that was kind of like a profound moment for me, not just on the field, but a life lesson.
Yeah. Yeah. Reggie, you know, I've had a couple discussions with him, just privileged, didn't know him, but just those couple of run-ins. And I loved how empathetic he was. Like, even in that situation of, you know, playing in my rookie year, you just got the feeling that, well, he understood the pressure I was under playing against him.
Wow.
You know, and like to have that type of empathy as a man, knowing what I was going up against and all of that, I thought that was pretty remarkable. And then seeing how that played out with other people, because we're not the only two guys with Reggie White stories, I promise you. I mean, so many guys I've talked to have been just profoundly impacted by him. And he was a great man. He wasn't just a great football player. He was a great man.
And I agree totally. And definitely a great loss, a shocking loss. You know, way too soon, as you know, many guys, unfortunately, that has things have happened to, and you try to learn and build on those and be able to try to help carry those legacies along in your daily life, as far as how, you know, how you interact with other people and pass the same messages on to you know, what the youth or you know, other adults or whatever the case may be, whoever you can touch, you try to touch who you can.
Yeah, that's one of the things that's really stuck with me about other people, even people that I barely know, of just trying to have that empathy that he brought. I mean, it really taught me a big life lesson. This guy that had no reason to come over there and say anything to me. He's Reggie. He could, you know, go on living his life. But the fact that he took that time, it literally affected the rest of my life. And even how I treat strangers and how the opportunity to work with me, whether it's in business or whatever, and how that may be affecting them. It's just taught me to kind of view life from somebody else's point of view, from their shoes, you know. So that, I think that empathy is just a really cool trait to have, you know, in the sport, in business, and carry with you for life, for sure. So let's talk now about transition. It is the buzzword of the last 5 years, at least. We see so many transition coaches, and everybody's trying to make, you know, make this transition easier now than it ever has been before. Because, you know, back when we played, you know, there weren't any programs, or, you know, you were just dropped off into the void. Now, you were fortunate, I think, in a lot of ways to, you know, stay in touch and in part of that team. But I think we all experience there's a loss that happens that you have to adjust to, right, in this new life. What was your transition period like?
Well, my transition period wasn't devastating in that along the way when I was playing, I always looked at myself as football is what I do, but it's not who I am. Yeah. And during the process of playing, it was almost like finding myself as I was playing as opposed to trying to find myself when I was done playing. So that decision of which direction I wanted to go, initially before I even started playing, I wanted to be an FBI agent.
Wow.
That was my thing, right? But I got drafted, and then I played long enough to where, okay, well, almost too old to be you know, I was in that little year and a half, 2 year window of doing that, and I was still, well, do I want to play still? Do I not want to play? And I was, and then the team offered a position. I was like, well, that kind of is, I might as well do it now as opposed to this opportunity might not be here a year and a half from now.
Yeah.
And still get to work with the team and still be a part of it and all those type of things. So the transition was not as bad as I was because I was still a part of the game.
Yeah.
You know, still was able to experience what a Super Bowl was, still experience the playoffs or experience, you know, working with guys and just dealing with issues that I've dealt with and being able to kind of, so I was in my element, so to speak, in my environment, and I think I struggle when they get out of that element and environment because of the fact that that's what we've done all our lives, the structure that we've had. Now we don't have the structure of, you know, you got your meeting at 7 or here at 8 or, you know, this at 9 and lunch at, you know.
Right.
All that's out the door, and now you're at home and looking at, you know, like, okay, what's next? And your wife or whoever, and everybody's looking at you like, well, you know, you're bothering me. So you know, guys, you know, struggling with, you know, with that dynamic of who they are. And I think that's what whatever your, you know, your passion is, you know, outside of the game and trying to find whatever that may be and tap into that way before the game ends, whether it be getting experience in another area. There's so many programs now or finishing your education while you're playing and all these type of things that basically are handed to you now, taking advantage of those resources that we may not have had when we came through so that when you do get to that trend, the transition is not as hard because you've kind of put some things in place.
Yeah. You know, it's something every chance I get to talk to, you know, current players, it's like you have to have purpose. Mm-hmm. And there has to be a purpose beyond football. Mm-hmm. That I just firmly believe that every man needs purpose, something that drives him and gets him out of bed every morning, right? And without that, we kind of get – that's where a lot of us get lost after the game's over of just finding a new way to find something as meaningful. So I totally agree with you. So to wrap this up, I want to look back in time and Al Smith now versus your rookie year. What one piece of advice would you give yourself your rookie year?
To live each moment like it's your last. When you're a rookie, you think, this is the way it's going to be. You know, year in and year out. Although I played each year like it may be my last, like, it, you know, you always think you got the next year.
I'm going to play forever.
Yeah. Like I'm going to play forever.
I'm going to tip the hat and say adios, yeah.
But knowing where I'm at now, mentally, spiritually, emotionally, as far as living each day to the fullest, not wasting time, you know, you think all the stuff we wasted time,
yeah,
on nothings, you know, when you're young, basically,
yeah.
and be able to start the retirement process, so to speak, at the beginning and not the end.
Yeah, yeah. Oh my gosh, so true, so true, so true.
Even while you're playing, obviously, when I say that, you still want to play. You're still playing.
He just got a way deeper intellect than me. He started when he was playing. It took me a few years. Alex has been great. Thanks for joining us on the show, man. This is awesome.
Well, I appreciate you
so much, man.
Appreciate you having me.